Good morning, everyone.
Okay, we are just a quiet little bunch this morning, aren't we? Good morning, everyone. Okay, good, good. A little two-way interaction. That's always a good thing. Glad you're here this morning. I want to begin this morning with you reflecting on your personal relationships, the people in your life. I want you to just, for a moment, just take some time to allow in your mind the pictures of people that hold very meaningful places in your heart. Just allow them to kind of enter your mental space. Maybe it's a friend, friends, it's family members, extended family. I'm betting there might be maybe a coworker that you've worked with in the past. I don't know. Who are those people? Just let those images of those people flood your mind. Now I want you to think about meaningful moments that you've shared with those people over the course of your life. If you look back and you go, I remember a time when this person, or him and I, or this group of people, we went and... What are those meaningful moments that have marked your life with those particular people? Why those people? Why do they mean so much to you? Just think about that for a second. For me, I think about a guy named Matt. He's one of my best friends through grade school. I met him when I was in grade 3. I remember one night, I was around 16 years old. We had a big guy's night. We were out, and I decided to spend the night at his place, which was often a regular occurrence growing up. Every weekend, it seemed like I was over at his place. I remember this one night, sleeping the typical sleeping bag I would on his bedroom floor. He was in his bed, and we were just chatting. And I said, Matt, can I tell you something? I don't know how it all came up, but I remember the night like it was yesterday. And I shared one of my deepest insecurities and fears. It was something I'd never told anyone before. I don't know what all he said, but it was like he leaned over his bed and said, me too. I can't explain it, but the weight that dropped off my shoulder from my buddy just going, hey, you're not alone, pal. Me too. Like you and I, we're... I just remember just going, oh my God, that felt so great. I felt so close to Matt. It's like he knew the worst part of me. And he was good with it. In fact, he could relate to me. I was just like, oh, man. I think about another friend of mine. For years, him and I planned these father and son golf getaways. We planned this golf trip every year. And we'd go out with our dads. And every night, the losing father-son combo bought dinner. And we ate. I mean... And so during the day, the competition and the trash talk and the games, the mind games that we were playing with each other to try to knock the other team out, and the laughs. Huh. I remember months away, just couldn't wait for that trip to spend with my dad and my friend and his dad and the bonding. It was one of those weekends we huddled around the TV. Years ago, watching as CNN was reporting the falling of the Twin Towers. And I remember all of us just so sobered, and the conversations that we had in that condo that weekend. I mean, it took our relationship to a whole nother level. I think about a small group of couples who rallied around Kathy and I at one point in time in our marriage when we were going through some dark relational water, her and I. how they supported us. The guys just encouraging me, you know, and the way guys do. It's like, hey, I want to go and do something. But the girls kind of wanted to reach out to Kathy and help her, you know, and at a time when, you know, we just felt lost between us and the role that they played there. And ironically, how over the years, her and I have played a similar role for some of them. What are the stories that come to your mind with your community and those people in your life that you have maybe bonded with over the years? I'm betting that in the midst of all that, like, come on, let's be honest. In the midst of all these highlights that I just shared, there were some lowlights too, right? There's some times when there was hurt. There was stuff that was said that shouldn't have been said. There was misunderstandings. There's times when my friends and I, we distance each other, distance ourselves from each other. There's some tough stuff. I'm betting as you're thinking about the people in your life, there's probably some lowlights mixed in there too. Some tough times, some tough conversations. It's weird though, isn't it? That even despite the frustration and the hurt and the that these relationships can cause, something inside of us still is deeply, it seems anyways, and maybe I can't speak for everyone, but it seems with almost everyone I speak with, there's this deep desire to connect relationally, deeply with others. To feel that connection, to feel that sense of, man, I am here with you in this moment and we can share this together. Despite all the junk that happens in a relationship, we still are looking for more of it, wanting it. Because when it works, it's amazing. When you connect with someone else in that special place and feel that connection. Oh. Somewhere along the way, I think the church figured this out. They realized how strong the gravitational pull for human connection is. And if I give it the benefit of the doubt, if I give the church, which I'm a part of, in fact, I'm a leader of, if I give it the benefit of the doubt, I would say that the church has been trying to help find solutions to help people meet those relational needs. If my skeptical side takes over, which it often does, I would say that the church has at times capitalized on people's need for connection by offering solutions that probably benefited the church more than it benefited people. And if you think I'm standing here in judgment, I'm telling you, I am guilty. For 10 years, I served this church, Friends Church, as connections pastor. This was my job, to help people experience these relational connections. I poured my life into it. So I know what I'm talking about when I say the church has often offered stuff that hasn't helped. Today we're beginning a series on building healthy communities. Something we haven't taught or really unpacked for a long time here at Friends Church. And if I was honest, it's because there's some baggage in this topic for me personally. Some guilt, some regret. But over the last few years, we've been, I mean, it just, it's a need. It's so foundational to us. And we've been wrestling with what is the church's take on this? What is the relationship between the church and healthy communities that we're involved with? And more we become convinced that there's redemptive potential in the role that the church can play with this. And so over the next couple of weeks, we're going to explore the nuts and bolts of how we think we can help and how healthy communities seem to work from all our experience, in hopes that we can lead to more of it in each of our individual and corporate lives. But before we get there, before we jump into the hows and whats, I feel like I need to share a little backstory on this topic of community as it pertains to the church. They say that in order to know where you're going, you need to know where you've been. And I'm hoping after I share some of the stuff I'm going to share this morning, you're going to see why it's important. I mentioned earlier that the church has offered solutions to the human need for relational connection. People will come into the church commonly struggling in some kind of relationship. It's common. Someone might be going through a divorce. Some might just be feeling like their marriage is on the rocks. Some are lonely and they're coming in hoping to find meaningful friendships, maybe beaten up in other areas of their relational world, thinking this is a safe place. These are safe people. I'm going to come in and look for something in here. One of the common messages of Christian churches, anyways, was that what you really need was God. He was the one who could meet that deep need for relationship. He would be the best friend you ever had. He would be the one who would never turn his back on you or leave you. It was often said that there is a God-shaped void inside of you that only God can fill, and you're trying to stuff that void with a relationship that ain't working. Yeah, it ain't ever going to work. You need God. Actually, God is all you really need. This was a very common message over the last couple decades. In fact, if you go back through popular music that's been sung in churches, just like we sing on a regular Sunday, you would see this through a big song that was, I mean, it was hopping, used in so many different circles. A song called "Draw Me Close to You." Anyone remember this? Just read through the lyrics of this tune. It goes like this: "Draw me close to you." Speaking to God, never let me go. I lay it all down again to hear you say that I'm your friend. Help me find a way to bring me back to you. You're all I want. You're all I've ever needed. You're all I want. Help me know you are near. You're my desire. No one else will do, because no one else can take the place, your place, to feel the warmth of your embrace. Help me find a way to bring me back to you. We would sing this song, and I got to tell you something. Can you imagine how comforting this message would be to someone who has been abandoned or neglected in relationship, who has struggled trying to connect? Can you imagine how that message would resonate? To be assured that God would always be there for you, unlike maybe what your parents had done, or what your boyfriend or your husband or your wife or best friend had just done to you. Oh, that's what I want. That's all I need. That'll fix it. God will be there to comfort you, to guide you, to help you. He'll bring peace in the middle of the storms of life. That is, a powerful and convincing message. People would come in and go, man, I'm telling you, this is what will fix it all. The problem was that after establishing this kind of expectation for God being the friend that you never had, many didn't experience God that way. Many didn't feel like that void got filled. Peace didn't all of a sudden just flow in and stay. Peace was elusive. Turmoil from broken relationships was still there. There was still this grinding going on the minute they'd walk out those doors with people. They would walk out of here still lonely, wanting to connect relationally with others. What also hadn't gone away were some of the relational hang-ups, the habits that would continue for some to sabotage their own relationships. So now, not only were people still relationally hurting, now they're wondering perhaps if they'd done something to piss off God. Because God wasn't coming through the way that they'd pictured. Maybe God was just the same as that husband or that girlfriend or that family member. Levels of disenfranchisement, just would build for people. They're going, I thought God wasn't like the rest of them. Now, probably the church had great intentions, and I'm not saying that that was the effect that it had on everyone. Because it worked for some. But that message was very dangerous for many. Let me tell you about a much older and just as confusing message that the church communicated, and perhaps still does in different parts of our world. I think in hopes of nurturing healthy community for Christians. In order to explain it, last Sunday, my son, Austin, my middle son, came home from a conversation he had with a family member. He was really upset. It was Thanksgiving. Isn't Thanksgiving just a peaceful time? I love it. We just went a happy family. Comes home and he's amped up. And which is untypical for him. And we were watching TV. He came over and he started asking these pretty straight up questions. I was like, where are we going with this? He had a conversation with a more removed older family member who was concerned about Austin's brother, one of my other sons, specifically about the friends that he was spending time with. And at first, Austin said, I didn't know where the questions were coming from. I thought maybe my brother was into some bad stuff with some friends I just didn't know about. But I couldn't figure out why this person would know. And so he started probing himself. He's going, why are you asking me these questions? Only to find out that this family member was concerned because my other son was spending time around non-Christian people. And so as he began to probe, and that became obviously the concern, Austin experienced a reaction inside of him where he's like, wait a second, are you suggesting that these friends of my brother's are dangerous? So he came home and he's like in my face. He's going, Dad, tell me the truth. Do you believe that having friends who don't believe the same way I believe are dangerous to me? I said, well, because they believe differently? No. He's going, no, you be straight with me. Is this what Christianity says? That in order for me to be a Christian, I got to be surrounding myself with Christian people. And these people who don't believe the same really are going to be trouble for me. I'm going, well, where are we going here? He's going, because that's what I was just told. He was incredulous. We'd never, ever spread that message in our home. In fact, some of our closest friends don't believe the same as me, come from different religions. They're like family members. And I'm looking and I'm going, buddy, look at me. Look at our friends. Come on, pal. Just look at our friends. He's like, because if that's what this is, I'm out. And I'm going, come on, pal. You look at me. I'm not saying that. Some of you probably have never heard this, been exposed to this kind of teaching. It might even be hard to believe that maybe that's common. This importance of keeping your distance from non-Christian people. This message was extremely strong and a dominant message within the church and still is in many circles. Probably if you looked around, it's common in many religions. This common message was that if you do get involved in relationships with non-Christians, you really invest yourself in those relationships. Best case scenarios, they'll be shallow. Right? They don't really understand the spiritual journey. You're kind of on a higher plane than them. You have to kind of talk to them like little kids. I don't know. I heard all kinds of different things over the years. Maybe they'll work in the short term, but ultimately they won't be fulfilling. It won't end well. In a worst case scenario, because their souls apparently are dead to God, they haven't come alive, I mean, that's strong language. I'm telling you, I've heard all this stuff. Probably said it at one point in time, to be honest. Their hearts are darkened. They haven't seen God. They haven't experienced God. And so in some ways, they're dangerous. They'll lead you away from God. So obviously, if that's a message in the church, the convenience, how convenient. Let's just build a lot of activity with Christians to fill up your weeks, to fill up your social calendar. Come and hang out with Christian people. Youth groups were notorious. As a youth pastor for many years, I had many parents constantly surveying the kinds of kids that were coming in. Never wanted the ratios to be getting upset with too many outsiders, troublemakers. Many times parents warn kids, you start hanging around that. Why? What's wrong with them? Well, they're not Christians. That's exactly where this family member went with Austin the other night. The problem is, we know better, don't we? People are dangerous because they don't believe the same things? Come on. In this church right here, right now, if we were to do a little survey of what you all believe, we would not have unanimity. Whatever. We would not be unanimous in our belief. Can I say that? We would believe different things. If this is true, we should not be in this place right now, hanging out, making friends. If beliefs really lead you down the... just curious. How many over the years ended up maybe dating someone and got that speech? Or perhaps were getting ready to marry someone? Or maybe you did marry someone? Or maybe you're the person that you shouldn't have married? Huh? You're going, you're the dark sheep that got in the... And parents were sitting there crossing their arms going, oh, I can't believe you're getting in. Or you're the best friend, or you're that person, and you were ostracized, you're treated like you're, And then eventually they came around and they went, wow, actually, you know what? You're a pretty nice guy. Okay, come on in. We know better to know that just different beliefs. For every person who tells me that marrying a non-Christian will end up in divorce, I'll point to the stats and show that Christian marriages last about as long as non-Christian marriages. Relationships are shallow and unfulfilling when we don't know how to communicate and when we refuse to meet each other's relational needs. But there will always be theological diversity within couples. Kathy and I don't believe all the same things. Sometimes we don't get along over it. But I do feel terrible for some of you who were those non-Christian people. Those people who didn't believe right. I see non-Christian. You're probably as Christian as people that were rejecting you. You just didn't believe the same things they did. But you got branded. I feel bad for that. I've watched many people say, I'll never walk into a church again after that treatment. I don't want to even go into the theology and the beliefs and the passages that are used in the Bible to defend those people, because for every verse that someone wants to pull up and try to stick that in the face, I will tell a story about Jesus who constantly broke all those rules and was continually condemned by the church for hanging out with the wrong people. In fact, befriending. In fact, welcoming people into his closest circles who were considered irreligious. Doesn't fly for me. I don't think this message from the church encouraging people to avoid non-Christians has been entirely helpful. I'll just stop there. Probably the most recent solution that churches have promoted for relationships and building communities, healthy communities, is the small group. When we started Friends Church back in 97, we were following carefully a church down the States called Willow Creek. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't. Big church. Over 20,000 people in this church. It's massive. And in the Christian world, it was kind of, at least in our world, it was the epitome of success. They were doing stuff right. So we would travel down there to attend conferences where they would show, they would tell how to do what they were doing to be effective. Embedded in almost everything that they talked about was this message of the power of community and relationships, especially those formed within the church. Again, kind of indirectly saying, hey, you need relationship, do it within the church. The tool they were using to do that was something known as the small group, which really were just groups of 8 to 12 people who met in homes on a regular basis to discuss all things spiritual, the goal of knowing and serving and celebrating each other. They called it doing life together. Cool, man. Messages like that go, yeah, sign me up. I remember sitting in this conference and they started talking about these small groups. I'm like, yeah, yes, please. Yes, please. I'd never been involved in one, but what, I mean, as they described them, I'm going, are you kidding me? We need these. We need these bad. I came back, man, I was on a mission. We're going to build small groups at Friends Church. We're just getting going. And, man, they, not only were these things designed to be able to connect people, but they said, this stuff actually, people can start caring for each other and it'll lighten the load of the pastoral staff team. Bring them out of the woodwork and connect them, and it'll keep them in the church. They won't want to leave the church. I'm like, pastoral, no-brainer. Let's make it happen. I came back and just started pounding this message of building healthy communities inside the church through small groups. Preach it on stage. Went to all the staff that were on our team at that time and said, each of you are now a small group leader. Whether they wanted to be or not. We signed them up. We said, all right, we're going to just start recruiting people. We started finding host homes, people who would host these groups, and started setting this up, and then started asking people to sign up for a group. It was interesting, the process of getting people into the group. It was kind of like ordering sushi at a restaurant. We would give out these kind of connection cards, and you would check off your, fill out your name, married, single, area of city, age. Some of you were around during these times. Interests, right? How long you've been in the church. I mean, it just this whole kind of diagnostic tool that we'd look at and we'd go, okay. And like, match.com, we'd kind of start going, okay, well, let's put these people over here and let's try this over here. And we start stuffing people in these groups. Now, on paper, this made absolute sense. But you can imagine the logistical challenges that this presented. I mean, if you think it's tricky to find a night that works for you and your friend together, get together. Try doing it with 12 people, right? Not only that, but everyone coming into these groups, no matter what their cards said, they were on all kinds of different levels of interest and knowledge of Christianity, different beliefs about spirituality. Their expectations were all over the map too. Some were coming in hoping to find a friend who were lonely. Some were going, man, I don't need more friends, but I would like to study the Bible. Some were coming in going, man, I am going through hell right now in a relationship. My ex is raking me over the coals. I'm very afraid I'm going to lose custody of my kids. Can we not talk about something a little more important than Isaiah chapter 22? Then there were the poor introverts, who we were saying, you need it. If you want to experience community, come on, jump in. They'd come into this big group of people they didn't know, and everyone's saying, share with us, would you? Like, and so they would kind of turtle, and people would be going, well, there's something really wrong with Nancy. Like, we cannot get her to share. And we put her on the spot numerous times. There were those that tended to monopolize the conversation. Yak, yak, yak. I know you want to say that the extroverts tended to be those two. Yak, yak, yak. someone would start talking, oh, that reminds me of, and so everyone, you know, be working on something, and I'd keep coming back to this guy, and people would be rolling their eyes going, okay, yeah, thanks, pal. But no one could say it. That might be the leader's job, if the leader was doing his job or her job. There were some who just always seemed to be so negative or so judgmental. There were some who were oversharing details of their lives. They didn't even know anyone in that room. And they're sharing like stuff and everyone's going, oh. Every week after all these stories would come back, I'd be like, oh no. Many, after experiencing one night like that, would vow, they'd swear off on small groups. They'd go, I'm not going back. But then they would run into these people on a Sunday, and sometimes the awkwardness was so difficult, they would just leave. They'd figure, you know what, it's just easier to leave the church than have to face those people and explain why I'm not coming back. Some of us were laughing because we've felt this, right? On paper, these small groups made so much sense, but in practice, it was tough. Now, I'm not saying that they didn't work for some. In fact, some of the most meaningful experiences in relationship for me personally were in some of those groups. But for many, it wasn't. For every good story I could tell you, there were just so many that were just very, not great. And then the more I looked at it, I questioned kind of the artificial, synthetic nature of the community we're trying to build. Taking 12 strangers, putting them in a room and saying, talk, or do something, decide. It worked better when people would actually kind of, if I look back, it always seemed to work better when people knew a few people and they'd say, hey, we're thinking about doing something like that. Would you be into that? And all of a sudden there's kind of more of a natural affinity, but this, the nature of kind of match.com for small groups, it was a nightmare. And so we would show stuff like that video that would have people just going, oh, I am so hungry to connect. And they'd come in and they'd go, oh no, this is, and then they would leave and they'd go, I'm screwed. I'm never going to experience that because that is the vehicle that it happens. It might sound like I'm villainizing the small group. I'm not. I'm just saying it wasn't the universal one-size-fits-all solution to community. But it was an attempt. It was an innovation that the church experienced. And this small group movement is still moving. It's still ripping in different parts and different circles. Different churches are like full on. I'm not saying it doesn't work. Those are some of our experiences. I tell you all this this morning not to rag on the church and the things that it's promoted and done, but to explain a few things about why we maybe focus on other things less than some around here. Why we maybe steer clear of certain language or certain tools or methodologies that maybe you were familiar with in your past experiences. Around here, we do value connection. Connection with God and with others. Huge. When I was talking earlier about God being the answer to everything, I was not in any way diminishing what God is or wanting to in any way. Connection with God is everything, why we do so much of what we do here on a Sunday. We know magic happens when you connect with God. But is it the answer to every struggle, especially relationally, that you're facing right now? I'm not sure that it's that simple. I think there's more to it. If you're carrying some relational baggage from past wounds, you got some triggers around abandonment, neglect, you have a tough time connecting with certain people, coming in and just connecting with God might be important in working on a part of your life, but chances are there might be pieces of your relational world that need help. Some therapy, in all honesty. You might have to become more self-aware of certain things that are sabotaging your relationships that need specific attention and instruction. We don't want to enable relational dysfunction around here. And sometimes in those groups, we call them EGRs. People that came in, extra grace required. They're sounds so brutal now. At the time, I'm like, oh yeah, those exist. People that just need a little more attention than others. But what end up happening is these people that come in with all kinds of hurts, all kinds of habits. They're needing to work through some stuff. They'd sit in a group. And people who didn't know how to deal with all this stuff, didn't know the right things to say, often the whole group would get monopolized by this. And then we would in some way implicate or obligate the people in that group to now befriend that person and do everything they could to help them. We think it might be helpful for us to be able to point those of us that are working through stuff, myself included, into the hands of pros, whether it's books and resources, podcasts, therapists, you name it, to work through the stuff in our individual lives and not necessarily expect others to fix that for us who are incapable. Different. There's sometimes Sundays, some would say, you didn't hardly talk about that. We're talking about relational skills we think that will raise levels of self-awareness in our community who can turn around then and be able to love their neighbor, love their family, love their spouse, love their friend better. That's some of the backstory to why we end up spending time on a Sunday talking about stuff that might seem extremely practical. But it's for that reason. Rather than trying to monopolize your relationships within the church, rather than trying to build a social calendar that gets you so busy to avoid the dark world out there, we've determined that the world isn't dark. The world is filled with God all over the place. He created this world good. You are right now working along some people that may not have the same religious language as you, but chances are, in some way, God is alive and active in them too. They might not identify themselves as Christian. We believe that that relationship can be as sacred as anyone that you have here sitting beside you. Can I say that? Which is why we tend to deprogram a lot of stuff around here. People say, what do you got going during the weeks? We go, woo. Depends. Why? Because you, each of you, likely have involvement in different areas of your life. Some of you have kids and sports and hobbies. Some of you are involved in different causes and volunteering in different organizations and are not in any way connected with Friends Church. We want to not pull you back from that. Those places where communities are building, healthy, natural, organic, where they're happening right now in your world without you even having to drive across the city to make it work. It's happening right now in your world. We don't want to try to pull you out of that, rip you out of that, and obligate you now to make a whole bunch of new friends because these are Christian people. We instead want to promote where you are with the friends you have, the family. Now, if you got some really negative situations going on and it's triggering whatever, okay, there's exceptions to the rule, right? And am I in any way diminishing the beauty of having relationships with people that are on the spiritual journey? Not at all. I think that's valuable too. I think, in fact, we encourage you to build connections here in the church because it can be wonderful to be able to connect with other people that share that affinity of the spiritual journey. But it's one piece. It's not the end all be all. So at times when we start talking about where your world is, go and live a God-colored life in your world. We want you to get outside the castle walls. We want you to be good news where you are. We're not trying to pull you away from your family. No. Half of us aren't spending enough time with our family. Or maybe that's debatable. I don't know. You have community, healthy communities, or shall I say natural community in different parts of your world that we want to actually support and not diminish. We want your spiritual journey to be such a natural reflection of what you're doing Monday to Sunday. It's not like all of a sudden when you walk in these doors, oh yeah, I got to put on my Christian face now. Oh, and these are my Christian friends now. No, we want this to be a natural outflow of your life. Make sense? I don't know how some of the messaging that the church has used over the years has affected you. Maybe some of you, everything that I shared with you is kind of foreign to you. I don't know. Chances are there's a few of you that have been affected by this, directly or indirectly. But I'm here to tell you that there's a new day dawning. There's a new way. There's more innovation coming. And we're stumbling, we're skinning our knees, we're trying to figure this out. One thing we do know, we are wired for connection in different ways. And as a church, we don't want to make it hard. We don't want to make it painful. We don't want to get in the way of these meaningful relationships that exist or maybe are waiting to be built in your life. We want to support that. We are all about that. So over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk nuts and bolts stuff about stuff that we think actually is getting in the way. Next week, Vince has a message. Oh, it's a goodie. Can't wait. We've never done that message, actually, at this church. And there's landmines all around it, but it's straight talk about what makes a relationship. And it's one the church has kind of avoided for a number of different reasons. You'll see why next week. So anyways, I'm done. I really pray this. I pray that the relationships that came to your mind at the beginning of this message and some of the memories that you have and as you reflect on the meaning that these people have, I pray that as we start talking over the next couple of weeks, that it directly impacts the communities that you're in, that it begins to help flourish. I'm going to invite the family. We're going to close the family. Yeah, my family. Thanks. We're going to close with communion this morning. And communion was a ritual that Jesus introduced to his disciples as kind of like one big family. The night before he was executed. And he brought his closest family, friends, together and said, I want us to drink some wine, and I want us to eat some bread, and whenever you do this thing, I want you to do it often. I want you to remember what I'm about, what I've taught you, and the way that I've introduced to you. I want you to embody that. I want it to realign your life. And that night, as they sat around that table, it's hard to even imagine what all that could have looked like or felt like, but there was this bonding around a common goal, common purpose they all shared together. Sometimes we do this in a very individualistic way, where it's just kind of you come and doing your own thing, but this morning, I guess, I was hoping that we could take communion much similar in a similar way, but that you would use this time as you take these elements, go back to your seats, that you would think about those people that God has brought into your life, the ways they've touched and marked you, and perhaps the way that he is wanting you to be able to mark them. You could maybe in this moment envision a brighter future for your friendships and relationships, knowing that's what God wants to do for you. We're going to close, and I want to just pray for you and in your journey to connect with others. God, thank you that you want to help this. I believe that, and I pray for every person that's on a journey to connect better with others, God, that you'll lead them to answers that will be open, and that the impact long-term will be healthy communities that we're all a part of. It's changing our world. Amen.